Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy. Dan Q.
Makalua.
The VN Team.
QNL.
With guest co-host.
Madjin.
Achievement unlocked. You made a simple jump.
Woohoo!
I'm on a boat! Sorry, oh, I love that one so much.
Everybody look at me.
Yes.
Hello, everyone. This is the main team. We're listening to episode 115, and today I'm joined by Daniel Quick.
You're gonna have to brace it, you're addicted to Civ. Might as well embrace it, you're addicted to Civ.
Majin?
Oh god, I don't have anything to follow up on that.
Thank you. And hopefully we'll be joined later by regular co-host Makalua as well.
Sometimes the best response is no response at all, especially when I sing.
Yeah.
I was just trying to adjust to the fact that I was echoing, at least on my own audio, quite badly.
Yeah, I heard that too.
That's just added sound quality for our listeners at no additional cost.
I see. Not only do you get to listen to me, listeners, you get to listen twice.
In stereo.
Now that's telling you right there.
Wow.
It's worth it.
We'll try a harmony later on with a song, and then it's, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Or Civ 5. We have some Civ 4 threads like this as well. Don't you just hate it when this thread is just kind of in its infancy here. And I did put together a top 10, but I think it's, even though I've done that, I think it's a little premature. So I'm just going to pick out from those 10 that I have that really kind of, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. Most of these are from TPQ. Why don't you just hate it when you have one city, but the AI still covets your lands? Hate might be a strong word, but I definitely roll my eyes. when an AI keeps trying to buy up every freaking city-state ally of yours.
Alex.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or Rami. Rami does it, too.
This is also a recurring theme here of Gandhi and nukes. The guy is supposed to be the most peaceful guy. Why is he always the one using the nukes?
Nukes.
He's coded that way in the XML if you look at it.
Yep.
Hilarious.
Hey, nukes bring peace. If you're not around, he can be peace.
Well, no, it's because they add happiness by lowering population.
Yeah.
Happiness is a warm nuke.
Yes.
And through this.
It will keep you warm for the rest of your life.
Oh, yes.
In more ways than one.
Even when you don't want to be any warmer.
I'm glowing.
When the AI tells you not to build close to them despite being nowhere near them. Yeah.
Or they tell you that and then they come flop a city right on your borders and go, hey man, why are you up in my borders?
Or I see your army. They're menacing that because they're adjacent to my unit that's halfway across the world.
Will you get out of my damn territory with your stupid scout? That happens so often. My military, very peacefully sitting around my city, and a scout walks past and they get pissy.
Yeah, that's really bad.
I'm not even beating on anybody.
That, but
this didn't happen to me, but I saw it was happening to somebody else where they ended up getting into this whole huge war in a multiplayer game because a city-state, they had it was like a mountain pass. It was only one tile, and a city state owned that this one tile in the pass. And so they had this. They didn't have anything else to build with their worker, but their worker was sitting in that pass. He could not move. So they ended up declaring war on that city state and somebody else, and ended up beating one of the other human players because they had a huge army after. Because the other human player got nervous because they had a huge army after going after the city state and the city state's allies, all because of one worker.
I hate when you're a warmongering menace to the world, when, like, you say you have five cities, your opponent that's attacking you, who declared war on you, has, like, 15 cities, he's already killed somebody, and he's already taken a couple cities off of somebody else, so this guy declares on you, and you kill his army, and you take, like, two or three of his cities, and you are a warmongering menace to the world as far as the other AI are concerned. Never mind that this super AI has already killed people or taken more cities than you've taken. Because you defended yourself in a war where you weren't even the aggressor, you're a warmongering menace to the world.
Yes, you are. Because you were able to beat up the guy who was beating everybody else up. Oh, yes, and then TPQs, when the game tells you that you're about to get a decisive victory, but he says, but you only get 2 points of damage. On my case, you get a decisive defeat.
Yeah.
Decisive victory! Wait, for who?
Lies.
Wait.
You know, if you were playing the game on April 1st and that happened, okay.
That just makes sense.
Yeah.
If you're on April 1st, this is the use only warriors, because they always win.
Or perhaps when that happens, you notice that for some reason when you launch the game, it changes your system setting to be April 1st of that given year.
Always.
I'm going to check that the next time that happens to me. Maybe that's what's going on. So on this episode, we're actually going to be doing a bit of a blend of both Civilization IV and Civilization V, and we're going to start off with Civilization IV under Forum Talk. Insert a theme to this segment into your brain right now. Thread started by Mylene over at Civ Fanatics. I found myself a bit bored of the quote-unquote standard game lately. Would appreciate some tips on different playing styles I could try, maybe using different options or settings, handicaps, good mods, etc., etc. All this info is probably somewhere here on the boards, but more handy if bundled in one thread. Thanks in advance. There are a number of suggestions here, which some people have put forth. I'm going to put forth my two options. First of all, number one, go commando. And that's not what you probably think, you dirty, filthy-minded people out there.
Yes, he's not referring to the knife lunge in Call of Duty.
What else could you be thinking about?
This is where you allow the game to choose which civilization you're playing. You go random, and if you choose random leaders as well, you could have it choose both your leader and your civilization. And my second suggestion actually gets to what some people suggest here, which is moving out of the single-player realm and into multiplayer. There are a number of options. There's play-by-email, there's Pit Boss, there's the succession games. But I'm going to mention something here, and I'm not going to mention the name of the guilty to protect them. But the best thing to do is to play competitively in a cooperative multiplayer game. Now, that is really, really interesting. Get some interesting results.
Yes, it could be.
Yeah. We've had some problems with that, haven't we?
Especially in Civ 5.
Yeah. This cooperative thing is annoying. I'm going to take you out.
Oh, come on. It's only death.
Yeah,
it's so hard.
Oh, well, no one's been able to do that to me, so I'm not too worried. But yeah, no, I kind of agree. Go with random, you know. If you want something totally weird and different, full on random is actually a good way to do it.
Certainly, mods, the potential there is endless as well. I mean, really, you can probably spend a year plus just trying out different mods, especially if you find one you like and play it for a while. And by then, who knows, you might be ready to come back to base Civ. And also, possibly start a new forum series or revive one of the old ones. And I'm not really hosting Pick Your Leader any longer, but that's an option. Or you could probably try the same start thing as well. So there are some options there, certainly.
Yeah. I mean, what it comes down to is, you know, why is the game still interesting to you? Right. So, and figure out what that is and try something different. I know there's tons of mods out there. And so, you know, if you haven't tried many of them, then definitely just randomly pick one up. If you don't like it, well, just keep going. Yeah, find something else that, especially on the Civ 4 side, there's a huge amount of decent mods that have been around for a while. So always worth a good look.
There existed a deity teamer. That's not easy, but certainly it could be interesting.
Fluorescent suggests no tech trading. Oh, yes, absolutely. That is, if you haven't tried that yet, particularly with the AI, man, that really does change, or at least should change, your tech path in a lot of situations, which will actually tie into a later topic, in part.
Oh, yeah.
Clam Spammer, I know Phil's going to love this one. He says that I'm in a fantasy realm map script kick right now.
It's not that I necessarily have anything against them, but it's just so off-kilter. I mean, I guess if that's what you're looking for, that's good. But you get these, like, floodplain, riverside, wheat, ice tiles, and they're like, 8 feet or something. It's just like, what the heck? But you have, like, multiple 8 feet tiles for one capital, and then you have another capital, like, Plains Cow, like your typical start that you don't want in a regular game. And it's just crazy the amount of difference you can get there. And I would probably dislike having 16 food on 3 tiles as much as I would like having only 3 food on, you know, a tile, because when you get that much food, it's too easy instead of hard. I don't know. But certainly it can be odd.
There's also the suggestion, I actually mentioned it already, just specifically with regards to deity, but even then just playing with or against teams as well, and then you can have the AI become one or more teams as well, or you can have them not be teams, or you can have the AI be a team and you be going individually along with other people. You can have a combination of cooperative and competitive, like it could be all competitive, human versus human, and also human going after the AI, all cooperative, human against the AI, or it could go from cooperative to competitive, where you take out all the AI, and then after that it's a free-for-all competitive against humans.
Although that certainly is that's a dicey one, that last one you mentioned. Because everyone's going to be prepping for that. And who's going to kill the AI last? Because the other guy's probably waiting with, like, 50 cavalry on the opposite side of the border. Oh, the AI's gone now.
Oops. It'd be the guy with the nukes.
Oh, well, yeah. If you can get the nukes first, then everyone's screwed. Yeah, nuke the AI and the human. Like, well, the AI's done. You're next. Before anyone gets a chance to react.
Preemptive strikes, always worthwhile.
Yeah, especially with nukes. You can wipe a Civ in one turn in Civ 4 with that. And they're pretty nasty in Civ 5, too, really.
Yeah, it's they got trimmed down a bit, but...
You're not going to one-shot somebody in a single turn in Civ 5 with nukes. You're not going to do that. But they can really ruin an incoming army pretty quickly.
And I guess also in Civ 4, if you really wanted to be thinking a little bit outside the box, if you wanted to go, you know, rewind the clock without the advantage of a time machine, and if you have it, you could also try to maybe, instead of playing Beyond the Sword, you could pull up Warlords or even vanilla Civ 4 and remember what it used to be like.
Yeah, that was good.
Go first anymore, Dan.
But something else that could be interesting. Oh, you could see how quickly you could get yourself wiped out.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty easy on deity. You just declare on someone when you meet them, and then they'll enter your borders in Archer and kill you.
And I don't mean also on the first turn disbanding all of your units. Okay, that's
yes.
That's cheating. That is an exception that is not allowed. And no, that doesn't mean you can do that on the next turn either. No, I know what you're thinking.
Possibly turn 3. Okay, fine.
Never disband all of your remaining units. There, I have encompassed the entire thing.
Whoops, I just gifted all these cities to AI. Well, that still wouldn't be the fastest method.
Yeah, but that might get a little boring after a while.
Yeah, like after a game or two.
Like, look, I can lose really quickly.
Put a raging barbs on and don't do anything. That'll do it, too.
Yep. Always walk your worker out 10 steps before thinking about where it should have been.
That could make for a wild party. Speaking of wild, how about wildlife? Here's my attempt at a segue.
That was slightly painful. So there's been a couple of threads on the 2K forums. There probably has been some on the Civ Fanatics forums, but Dan's not great at research. Ooh, sorry.
sorry, a little gastrointestinal distress. Completely coincidental, I'm sure.
Coincidental.
I'm sorry, we're talking some smack there, imagine, and I was putting it in place. Please continue.
There's been some requests to get some of the Civ 4 wildlife back into the game. So, you know, the early lions, whales, bears, and all that fun stuff.
Sorry, I'll cough.
Gee, I'm sorry, Phil. I had no idea it could spread over interwebs. My bad.
Yeah. So basically, they want it back, is what it comes down to. And I know Dan handed this to me because my first reaction is, no.
Oh, come on, imagine. Tell us how you really feel. Don't just, you know.
Well, that was nice. the ancient era just doesn't last that long. And the only real impact that the animals had in Civ 4 was, you know, before you started getting civilization started built and getting units out and everything else, that's when they were the most painful. And they had a good basis there. I mean, if you got a lot of barb camps spawning on turn zero right beside your capital in Civ 4, you'd be really screwed. Then that's where the lions, wolves, and bears and all that fun stuff was interesting, but with Civ 5, you know, you can have barb camp show up on turn zero, which does happen quite often, and it's a minimal factor in the game. So since wildlife are supposed to be less than barbs, it doesn't really affect you so much, especially if you've got a starting warrior, so you just walk over, whack it on the head, and keep going. It might annoy your scouts a little, which would be nice, but you know, you can get into classical and medieval era so quickly that the effect of the animals actually in the wildlife just isn't big enough to be interesting. If the ancient era tech section was more full as it was in Civ 4, I could see this being somewhat useful.
If you put, like, Civ 4 versions of animals into Civ 5, well, first to start off, Dan, probably give you this topic, knowing how I feel about it. But, yeah, if you put, like, the equivalent of a Civ 4 bear into Civ 5, you would be, like, running around with a spearman strength unit, or, you know, at least something stronger than a warrior that moves faster. You know, it's like, what is this? It's bear cavalry. That's what it is.
Yeah.
My problem with animals in Civ 4 has always been that they're just, well, first off, they're completely unrealistic because they can kill organized military units, not to mention entire cities worth of settling parties. There's just no grouping of animals that does that in reality. So they're not very realistic. But then what are they good for gameplay? The only function that you have from them is that they make you scout slightly more carefully, but you can still lose your scouting unit really early to, like, a panther attacking you from the fog, or, you know, maybe you have to enter defensive terrain and, oh, there's bear cavalry, and now your scout's gone. And it can really change how you play the opening because you don't have the scouting information, but whether or not that happens to you is totally random.
Yeah, well,
so they're not really good from a gameplay standpoint either. So I'm not a very big fan of polar bear and panda power here, wanting the animals back in the game.
Well, I mean,
I do not advocate bringing in how animals were in Civilization 4 into Civilization 5, but just like you can, for instance, disable barbarians in the setup of Civ 5, and kind of what Colonel Mustard is getting at on the chat as well, being able to enable or disable that, so you could have that on. And I know there's balance questions here to get into, but it also kind of ties into the previous topic, that if it's something, I think it's something that could be added, it could have value as a different tactic, as a different approach that you would have to take early on in the game. And maybe to some people that would be, oh, sure, if I want to be masochistic, then yes, I'm going to go for this option. But I'm in favor of having it as an option, but we need to be looking at how it was in Civilization 4 and recognizing that simply copy and pasting what it was like from Civ 4 into Civ 5 is not the answer.
Well, it's not really the answer anyways, because, I mean, barbarians that spawn early are going to whack your scout in one or two hits anyways. So you already have that problem with scouting. So I don't see any real value add. I mean, sure, you can put some little things that wander around and maybe take a couple hits on a worker, or make it something that the scouts can actually deal with versus just getting ran over if they get anywhere near a unit. But, yeah, definitely, it's just not – the concept was okay in Civ 4 – concept, not implementation. It was okay in Civ 4 because it took a while, and that was part of it. The very start of a Civ 4 game did take a while to get going. So having a barbarian empire beating on you right at the start didn't really make much sense. But with the changes to Civ 5, where really turn 10 should be the last time you ever see an animal, it doesn't make much sense. Sure, it can be a cute little mod to toss it in, but not really a vanilla thing.
Well, it was actually suggested in this thread that maybe we could see animals being added as DLC, which, okay, I laughed at that. No.
not paying for that.
That was actually quite amusing.
I think Imagine hits it on the head here. They just would not be doing enough in the game. Like, there's no role for them that would be valuable to the gameplay right now. And not only that, like, if you can pick something to add to the game as an option, first priority is not animals at all. I'd rather see multiplayer working first or something, just or even like a reworking of unit balance before we'd be looking at adding animals to the game, because it'd be such a minor impact compared to so many things.
Oh, yeah. I certainly would not suggest that this needs to be a priority, or that we need to be, you know, prioritizing this over something else, something that needs to be corrected, such as multiplayer issues. But just the idea in and of itself, like also in Civilization 4, you had the barbarian animals, and then, what was it, as it turned 40 or 50 or something like that, maybe it scaled with game speed, I can't recall, but that you would end up with quote-unquote barbarians proper, like actual people who were barbarians. Some people suggested in this thread, perhaps, and maybe also in part getting to the point, maybe about, you know, how short a time frame it is that you could have barbarian animals as well as barbarian people appearing at the same time. And maybe you could have it so that the barbarian animals, even if it's just more of a stylistic thing, that they are in the wild. If you're exploring with your scout or your warrior or whatever, where there is no settlement, no civilization settlement, and that you could also include that with city-states as well, that you're more likely to see animals there, and then the barbarian humans are more likely to be found trying to snipe your workers, etc., around your cities and city-states. But I will add, just as kind of a caveat to that, someone, I'll have to find it here, suggested that it gives the city-state something to complain about. Well, they don't need something else to complain about, but...
Yeah, they already complain enough. They just don't complain fast enough.
But I think there can be a place for animals in Civilization 5, so I guess I'm alone.
No, I've got a use. We'll bring back the throne room and you can fill it with animals.
That's a good idea and funny.
Mm.
You can have a throne or a cheetah.
Woohoo!
We're going to go for the cheetah.
Yep. Actually, one of the best parts about this thread is somebody misspoke. It says, hippies are non-predators, but highly territorial and dangerous. Should have hippies.
Then the poll, and of course, the fact that there was a poll in one of these threads had absolutely no bearing on my choosing the topic.
No.
Over 100 votes, yes is winning. Woohoo! At 58, but of course, yes and no, and then there's don't really care. That's really very... vague, because we don't, you know, we go from concept to limitation like we talked about, but the no and don't really care are almost tied. And
actually, they are tied.
Yeah. Oh, well, okay, sorry for my dad after being like an hour out of date.
I just voted.
You probably just went and voted just so you could say that right now.
Yes, I did.
Click, you're wrong.
Well, I haven't voted yet, so I'm going to go, no, I'm not going to do that.
I sold the vote also.
Bronze Yeager said, I voted don't care because someone else's comments pretty much convinced me that no is best. Okay.
Awesome.
Wait a minute. But is this like Civilization 4, you know, like the Apostolic Palace where you're the UN or something, where you're like voting abstain is the same as no? Like, come on.
I love doing that so much.
What the heck is going on here? Oh, gosh.
All right, so wildlife, yes, no, not DLC.
Maybe before we move on to the next topic, give another shout-out to our audience member right now, Colonel Mustard, otherwise known as Joel, in something called Real Life. I know we try not to think about it too much, but it's there. So Joel, how would you vote in this poll? Would you vote on wildlife? Yes, no, or don't care. I'm curious. We'll leave the final word to you, as long as it doesn't take too long to be received.
And in 2, 1. Don't care.
Ah!
Alrighty, Civ 4 topic, currency. Zared starts off with Ramesses' rules, and he's saying, I'm wondering where you guys normally fit currency into your tech sequence. Any of us research alphabet and get math and trade from there. Do you then usually get currency immediately, or research something else and trade it for currency? And I've actually been in this thread, and it's a hard question to answer. Pretty much, you get currency when it's your best option. Who likes that kind of answer, though? But it also depends on difficulty somewhat, because in lower difficulties, you're not going to be trading aesthetics for alphabet so easily, because AIs are going to take absolutely forever to research alphabet. So you're probably going to wind up researching alphabet yourself, or even ignoring it sometimes, in favor of just going math to currency. So, yeah, if you're noble, you might do that. Whereas if you're on, say, emperor or deity, you might be researching aesthetics first. But anyway, when it comes to currency, there's a lot of factors. There's keys to consider who's in, on the map, who's already researching it, who has it already, whether or not something like calendar or monarchy is more critical for you. You know, you might even want something like metal casting first, although that's pretty rare. But it's so situational that it's hard to answer the exact timing of currency. For example, like say you're semi-isolated with Victoria or something, so it's just you and her on the continent, and she won't even trade it to you, well, then you should probably be self-researching it after, you know, whatever calendar resources you've tacked, or if you don't have calendar resources after monarchy, whatever. But then you're on, like, a continent with 6 AI, and you can research, say, Compass and trade for currency, Code of Laws, and something else, maybe monarchy all at once, just by binary researching Compass. So there's really no clear answer here, but what I will say is that objectively, unless there is significant draws for alternative techs, currency is one of the strongest techs in the early game. So work it in as such. Maybe you have 3 to 4 calendar resources, so calendar stronger. Maybe you really want monarchy for some reason. Maybe like you have Catherine and Gilgamesh near you, and you want to get the favorite civic going right away. You might trade for monarchy as a priority, or research it yourself and trade it to them. That doesn't happen very much on high difficulties, but it might on lower ones. But whatever you're doing, currency is still going to be one of the strongest techs because it grants an instant trade route and the ability to build wealth. And that's very, very strong in the early game.
Yeah, Ramesses really talks about always done currency as soon as I get math. Unless I have a ton of cash crops, then I go count and let the workers build plantations while I research currency. I would say there might be some other times if I'm thinking to take an opportunity and go war, I might go math and then go to construction and then decide, okay, on currency and calendar based on my available resources. But other than that, as Phil said, yeah, it is a technology that you do not want to leave by the wayside for too long.
Sure.
What if the word you say you do it? No.
Yeah. No, currency sucks. Here's the currency.
Currency is horrible.
And this pretty much happened in the thread, too. As the time goes on, the thread kind of got derailed into other things. Yeah. Like paying for early wars and raising cities versus not raising cities, things like that.
Yeah, and cheating trades and stuff like that. Somehow currency translates into rocketry.
A thread going on a tangent? Man.
Well, cheating trades do have some relevance if you're talking about those resource trades, though. Because when you want iron, you're probably going to need currency or a bunch of resources if you want to trade the AI for iron. But if, say, Catherine wants iron, she has to trade the AI itself to get it, and that's it. That's all she needs to do. She has iron again. So you might need the gold per turn, but the other AI does not.
Yep. I mean, I think Phil already said it anyways. Yeah, currency, tech sequence. What are you trying to do? Who's on the map? It's potent, but sometimes if you've got somebody right beside you, that's not the most important thing in the planet.
Some background here, just a little bit on currency. 400 beakers, you need mathematics or alphabet. Lead you towards code of laws, and then down to civil service and paper, and then the printing press and education branches, enabling gold trading via diplomacy, plus one trade routes per city, and can build wealth. So in that respect, if you have a lot of calendar resources, you get that first. You get your workers then building those plantations while you're researching currency, and then those are finished, and then you can go to the AI and ask for some money or some other resources, be it health or luxury, depending upon your circumstance and what it is you need, or what you need more.
Yeah, that works. It has been a while since I've played.
You know, we're talking about currency, and there's also calendar considerations and construction. What is it with all of these technologies, starting with the letter C? I think it's a conspiracy. Oh, another letter. Oh, my gosh, another C word.
That's a good question. Are you going to a religion game? If you're going that way, then currency is a little later in the plans.
Only a little bit, though, because you usually wind up just trading for it.
Yeah.
And by religion, you're talking like apostolic policy, is that what you're talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, well, that's true. You might never tech it if you're going AP. If you're like on Pangea or something, you'll just win before.
Oh, you know, any way to win.
Let's just only go for AP wins on Deity and then talk about how good we are. That would be excellent. Yes.
That is awesome.
One city challenge. Some challenge. Hey, have you come up with a general order of priority for buildings, given an individual specialization within the city? For example, in Civ 4, the granary was such a runaway strong building that unless you needed a border pop, you're always getting it first. And then you had very specific return on investment tiers, like libraries come very early in new cities, for example, and forges and courthouses are up there in the pecking order as well. Have you come up with any sort of heuristics that are similar to that for Civ 5?
Not yet. Libraries, obviously, as early as you possibly can. Getting that extra science, you know, generally helps. And they lead directly towards universities for the two slots now for great scientists. So that's just a super spam. It might depend on if you're trying to go OCC or small empire versus expansive. Granaries now are finally working the way granaries should, where you get a couple base food, plus if you have a bunch of deer or wheat or something else that I'm sure somebody's going to remind me of shortly after this. There's three pieces in there that, you know, if it's food, oh, bananas, there we go. If you have a lot of food around, then granary definitely you want really fast, because you're going to get a lot of extra food while you're building or while you're working all those tiles anyways. And then your pop could skyrocket, especially as soon as you add an aqueduct. So it might be more start dependent, heuristically. I've been playing the Arabs lately, and I've been working on fast currency rather than fast civil service or anything along that line.
Yeah, I could see why you might do that in their case.
Yeah, it's actually really interesting. But even still.
And, of course, that is the time you're going to roll, like an isolated start. Just, that's how any Civ likes to treat you. Or like you pick Rome in Civ 4, yep, you're isolated now.
Yeah, exactly. I think especially after the latest patch, it's your start area is going to determine which buildings you want first. But I'm sure other people will disagree with me on that one.
Well, libraries sound pretty no-brainer-esque to me, but after that, it's kind of iffy.
Well, there's a lot of talk on the forums, and this is totally off thread now, but about going monument first. If you're trying to hit meritocracy really quickly.
Yes.
Or if you're going landed elite and want a bunch of temples. And there's probably a whole other topic about that, about how even legalism's kind of broken at this point. And so, monument first could be interesting if you're going that particular path. Libraries first. Even once you open up the text, even workshop first is probably more important, given that your base cities are not as solid as they were before with production. So if you get that workshop in there first, you can help produce all of the other buildings. Because you drop a new city on standard speed, and you're still looking at like 70-odd turns for just building a monument or a library or something. I don't think it's been quite fully worked out about what's the best off the start, but it will entirely depend on what's around you.
Draw muse? I don't know. How do you say that?
I think draw muse.
Yeah, draw muse. So. All right. So over on Sifinatis, he was asking if water mills were generally worth it. Two food and one production seems fine when a city isn't doing anything really useful with its hammers, but it's two maintenance costs. So do people generally build them or skip them?
Build them.
Yeah.
Next up.
It's, seriously, as much as all of our production got nerfed, I don't care that it's two maintenance costs, it's more production.
Well, true, and it's the two food. Two food is one more citizen, so one more citizen can work at least, you know, especially with the upgrades to the trapping-related resources. So if you have an elephant out there on a river, that could be 6 gold, you know. Mm-hmm. 6 gold per turn versus 2. Hey, there you go.
Most production tiles will pay off there.
Yeah. Or even just now wind mines. Okay, yeah, now you've got me thinking mills. mines. You know, an extra 2 food, especially tagged in with a granary. There's 2 more citizens to work more hammers to get more stuff. It's a win.
It's a bit more research, too. So you're getting quite good yields from that. Yeah. Overall.
The only thing I can say about not building them consistently is when you're doing DD level games where you're planning on having some serious great scientist production, you're not really thinking about growth. You're thinking about city spam, libraries, universities, great scientists spam, and then all of a sudden you're an industrial. So it depends on how long your game really wants to go. And that's kind of a problem in general with tall empires versus expansive. If you're trying to end the game within 150 to 200 turns, water mills might not be the highest priority. At least not initially, maybe after the universities.
Yeah.
And as was pointed out in the thread when it came to the fact costing 2 maintenance as compared to other ancient and classical buildings that do 2, you're able to work more tiles, and in working another tile, you can put a trading post on there, and then that would pay for, and then you've got the increased growth, and you've got the increased production, and you come out ahead.
Yeah, because somebody was putting the, well, you're paying 2 gold a turn for a hammer. Yeah, but then you're also getting 2 food with that, which gives you another person who could work something that could be worth many, many, many gold. So it's at the very least, it pays for itself.
Oh, yeah, especially early in the game. I mean, once you start hitting Renaissance, and if you're still slapping down new cities, maybe not, it will pay off. But early game.
Yeah, but early on, that's that many more hammers you're producing as opposed to the AI, so.
Yeah, who's got like a bazillion hammer production bonuses anyways.
Yeah, you might catch up.
Yeah, exactly. Especially for your capital, even. And I think that's probably where water mills will be the best, especially Tamnac. I think if I can say that because I'm in Quebec. it's not a swear word here, I swear. You know, water mills, perfect for riverside capitals. You know, throw in some landed elite, granary, water mill, plus an aqueduct, and your capital is just going to fly.
Granaries as well. I also am building those as soon as possible, but if I'm particularly want for hammers, although, you know, you get, let's see, granary and when's water, when do you need water? Oh, the wheel. Yeah. Sometimes you may want to do a water mill first for that hammer benefit, depending upon, you know, if you've got a lot of flat land around you. Certain map scripts tend to emphasize that more. Maybe you're starting bias too. So there's a place for both.
I think there's a place for most of the basic buildings. It just depends on where you're going to go and what's around you. You know, if you're starting kissing Elizabeth right off the mark because she's only a couple tiles over, water mill's probably not the best choice.
Yeah.
So you might want a couple more units, depending on your difficulty level. And again, the lower the difficulty level, the more you want to grow. And I think Emperor is probably the best of all the difficulty levels for balance on that front. But again, that's a different topic, since start getting into how DD is so easy once you figure out how to abuse the AI.
That applies to all games.
Yeah.
And so then maybe that takes us then to the research lab with a thread that is on We Play Civ, Civ Fanatics, and 2K Games, tying it all together in one big mess, reinterpreting Civ 5's game map. Whew. It also has some varying titles as well, but that's the one that caught my attention. This thread started by, well, it depends where you're at. I'm going to pronounce it his CFC username, because I know I won't butcher it, which is SifCube. On WPC and 2K, it's Sirgen. That's just a guess. But the message is the same, whichever form we happen to be putting it in. I like to play on smaller maps. The lay of the land, or lack thereof, rather, makes it easier to read what's going on. Things aren't as complicated, right? Sure. In fact, that's the problem. The overall gameplay still felt rather flat. The map felt empty because there wasn't really much to freak out over except for cities, city-states, and the odd weakling unit. What about taking buildings out of the city and placing them on the actual map? Or put another way, how about translating more infrastructure and game concepts into actual objects to protect? And then he goes on to talk about, you know, city slots out of the city. For instance, he says, with one unit per turn, this can make things very risky. Suppose a tile could only hold so many buildings, say four buildings on this marsh, and the pyramids took up two. There they are, just waiting to be taken. How do you protect them? This leaves you more vulnerable, but at the same time, you can bask in the glory of your expanding empire turn by turn. Mentions domination victory is the condition in the least need of attention. Side note, really? I'm sorry. But anyway, continuing. But here's where it gets interesting. A three-city empire is small, right? Wrong. Because it has more wonders and cultural buildings, a tall empire could be spitting out its crap all over its territory. Unquote. That's right. That's not my wording. I think it maybe we should qualify that a three-city empire, if it has more wonders and cultural buildings, just because it's a three-city empire doesn't mean it will have more wonders and cultural buildings. But anyway, okay. And then he makes reference to the Polynesian Maui statues with regards to how this is actually appearing as kind of a physical object on the map.
Your lawn gnomes.
your fancy Pacific Island lawn gnomes.
Yes.
And then he talks, and then finally it's about the diplomat of victory is one sensitive baby. And notice they will if more keys to diplomatic success are tied to the map. Civ 5's map currently doesn't know which Civ it wants to work for. Does it work for Civ 4's city system where all the buildings were in one tidy place? If it does, then there's a huge opportunity being lost by not cluttering the map with other people's stuff. With one unit per turn, your units should be in other people's business, whether you want them there or not. Let's stop thinking of production improvement in terms of stacks and spread them out like units. Unquote. Well, my first reaction was the visual. I mean, I know there's an aesthetic thing, but there's also a practical consideration in there, too. I mean, graphics can be shiny, but at sometimes all that shiny can blind you.
All that shiny can lag your game in a game that already lags enough to say it.
Yes, there is that. One of the things he doesn't talk about is, so can you actually pick the tile that you're putting a building in? Because obviously you still can't pick the yeah. place where your wonder is going in, so Stonehenge frequently goes out in the middle of the ocean.
Water.
I would put it there anyway, honestly.
I'd like, haha, take that. What can you do with it? Pillage this.
All they need is a boat.
Come on now, Stonehenge has almost as much function in the ocean as it has on land.
Nothing? I would say it's not a bad concept. That's weird. I don't know why I just said that. It's not a...
It's not a horrible thing that you want to kick it to the curb right now and say, forget it. But anyway, yeah. Is what you're trying to say.
Yeah, but anyways, one of the things, actually, I do kind of agree with them, you know, you get cities that are like 20, 30, 40 pop cities, especially the AI can do it anyways, and they're still stuck in one tile. And you can have infinite number of buildings attached to that, and wonders attached to that one tile.
You have to think that all those cities must look like Tokyo.
Not even. You're looking at, you know, some futuristic thing where you're building on top of each other. And you know, your Stonehenge is up on top of the radar building. So I would be interested in seeing some sort of spread as population grows for the buildings. So that, sure, why not? You know, you hit 10 pop and your new buildings are starting to show up in the first ring around the city. And same for, you know, housing and stuff like that. And maybe that'll actually take down some of the improvements that you have within that one hex. And might make it interesting to see where you go.
Like maybe you would have a cap on your population. And you would have to designate a hex to be like a suburb or something to get it to go above a certain amount.
Yeah, that might be interesting. I'm not sure if that's where he's going with it, but...
Well, he's talking about all the buildings being on the map, but, yeah. You know.
I'm not saying necessarily that you could put them there. Although I'm not sure you could get four buildings into a marsh without money.
No. Sure you can. Houston, it's built on a marsh. It's
true.
Into the ground, but.
Of course. So that could be interesting, at least in the concept of, you know, if you're pillaging things. So maybe you won't be able to take the core of the city, but, you know.
You can go run through their industrial district and either bomb the heck out of it or burn it to the ground.
Which is actually more common in war.
Yeah.
You're going to bomb the industrial district. Ooh, look, there's all your factories gone. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
I'll take your population now, thanks.
So that could be interesting. I'm just worried about the mechanics involved and whether or not it's personal pick by the player of where things go versus the AI randomly choosing to put your stuff in the wrong spot, like it does right now. Especially with units and free workers and everything. That game that Dan and I played last week, the AI chose to put my free great scientist and my free settler and my free worker always in the tile where there's a barbarian within two. You go get it. Not on the other side of the river. No. Always had to be in the spot to be able to get munched by a barb on the same turn.
I knew there was a catch to the freedom.
You see, imagine it's just reflecting real life. Opposites attract.
Wouldn't they put some of these things in your cities, especially if your city is, you know, empty? That really does bother me a lot. I lost a great general once that way. It was an instant rage quit. I was really angry.
Like, getting back to the thread, though. I think it'd be a good plan. But then you'd also have to consider, can you damage world wonders? You know, having the pyramids help all your workers is great when they can see it from space, but maybe you want to take a shot at those to damage them up, especially if they're going to take up tile building space.
Wouldn't that be great if you could, if it was spread there and you saw that there was a tile that had the pyramids on it and you moved onto the tile and then you could pillage it?
Yeah. Or at least yours. Or at least, even if you can't pillage the pyramids, you're standing on top of it, so the nicety of whatever the pyramids are giving you, in this case, free, faster workers.
Nullified.
Yeah, it's nullified.
Ah, yes.
At least temporarily while you're there. Might make the whole one unit per tile, you know, war of attrition while you're standing outside of their city, wondering how they're still getting so much food to keep the population up, a little more... tactical.
Because they're AI, probably?
Yeah.
That's the answer to all the what the questions. Usually, it's AI.
Yeah.
That's it. Joel says these are all dinner tiles. Well, depending upon what happened before, like perhaps maybe the pyramids were dinner, and then they decided to go for Stonehenge for dessert. And, okay, the other way around then. Geez, I'm not being picky or anything.
Fine, then.
Just speaking fine.
Okay, what's bad about this concept?
Well, if we had to pick individually on tiles, if we're going to do food and we're going to do production in this one, then you still have to have room to expand your city cap, but then you have to have an area for your industry. Eventually, you're going to run out. I don't know how you're going to balance that. And then how do you pick which tile belongs to what city?
Well, generally inside the city menu.
That's normal tile swapping.
Yeah.
What I think is that it trends away from what Francis has been doing up until now, which is nerfing the hell out of offensive warfare.
Well, that's because we all complained that, in the last game that the easiest way to win was to go to war. I mean, that was it.
Well, yeah, now they have it to the point where somehow cities are arranging siege and stuff like that. It's really trippy. But if you put all the benefits of the cities out on the field, then all the defending yourself is very difficult again.
Well, yeah.
That.
No, especially if you build that new castle and it has to go three hexes over because you've already filled up everything else.
Yeah, there's the other problem. You'll fill up the stuff directly next to you, and then you'll need to have something next to you, and you're like,
Well, this mechanic would have an interesting impact if you could use walls as such and place them to function as actual walls.
Yeah, that could be interesting.
But we're completely creating a new game here by design. But still, I mean, it's an interesting idea that it actually could wall off that way.
Yeah, everything within one hex has been walled in as the old city, and everything on the other side of that wall is the new city.
No, like literally you could build walls and pick hex borders for cost.
Yeah, like having a mini Great Wall going around your city.
Yeah. It's
definitely a new game mechanic. But not bad. Because, again, I think the whole thing seems to be, it's like, we want to get more tactical, but we want to leave cities to be this weird strategic thing that doesn't do anything tactical. Except for, you know, massive range shooting with no units around.
Yeah, and the ability to put units in there that can hose you with range without them being vulnerable as well.
Yep. I don't mind the concept. I mean, especially, even if it's just visually that you're putting stuff out there, because, I mean, right now, graphically, they're still building the buildings on that city tile. If you zoom in far enough, you'll see all the buildings that you make. So, you know, spreading them out a little bit could be more visually interesting rather than... and I think that might be part of what he's trying to go for, is, you know, tall cities should be taking up space, at least visually.
I will hack the game and put in different art for buildings so that it's really hard to tell what's going on. I can't see.
Is that a barracks or is that a... I don't know, what am I building?
Oh, that would be awesome. Or like have building equals a fog of war or something. So even when you're in my territory, you can't see what you're doing.
It's the statue of the bear that you killed in the ancient era.
Commemorating all the settlers who lost their lives to bear cavalry.
Not the bear cavalry.
There's no stopping bear cavalry.
Except with a wall.
No. No, that stops regular cavalry, but bear cavalry not so much.
Well, now, if you have bear cavalry and you attack them with other bear cavalry, does that not cancel them out?
No, it just kills everything around. Basically, it creates a shockwave. Basically destroys the planet.
Nice. It's a good way to lose the game.
You have been defeated by the bear nuke.
I'm just looking through some of the comments, at least on the Civ Fanatic side. No one thinks that it's a horrible plan that I've seen so far, unless somebody's commented recently. But still, I mean, it's kind of a question of, does the dev team have the time to do it?
I think the one outright negative comment I saw was from Kamikaze, past guest on the show, which says, if you expose buildings and you are encouraging others to attack you even more than they already are, just like pillaging.
Yeah, but the AI does it anyways. So, otherwise, yeah, I could see various abuse problems coming in here. Definitely, it would require you to have a bigger army right off the mark. So if you're trying to play that culture science diplomatic game that randomly gets assaulted, you'd have to have a really big army to be able to keep your cities from falling to pieces really quickly. Because, you know, the carpet of doom from the AI is just going to walk over all of your territory and just pillage everything and destroy your city without even taking a shot at it.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 441-288-7659. That's 441-288-7659.
121-288 Poly.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast and Revcast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
And so, again, as we've been saying, we've been kind of going back and forth between Civilization IV and Civilization V, like on a teeter-totter. I bet you didn't expect I was going to use that term on this episode now, did you? No.
I like teeter-totters.
You just lost a bet with yourself.
I don't gamble, I just win. Anyway, which way are we teetering now?
I believe it has something to do with Mackie.
Ah.
Whoa, hey now, let's talk about Sims.
No.
Polycast episode 115 with Dan Q.
It's 4 p.m. Where the hell did the day go? Oh, Civilization. That's where.
The Mian team.
I'm not wildlife. I'm an animal.
Makalua.
I don't think I can top that one. Random caffeinated comment goes here.
And myself, Madajun.
And we invite everyone to tune in a couple of weeks for what comes after 115? Oh, that's right, 116.
Oh, I thought it was 118.
Close, Mackie, close.
Keep on sipping. Ooh.
Yay! Hoorah!
Didn't even number!
My thought is that she just buys caffeine and puts it in a syringe and injects it straight in.
Or other caffeinated beverages.
That's what... No, I'm not going to finish that line either.
Stop it. You're killing me here. I was thinking about this because I've, you know, got the topics about 10 minutes ago. And I was thinking about it, and...
That was more like 50. Come on. What?
I don't know what I've been doing for the last half hour.
Back to Civilization 5. A question with regards to a particular tile improvement that you can build so long as your city is adjacent to a river, and that is the water mill.
Gosh, not a tile improvement.
Oh, fuck. Oh, I swore on my back.
I win.
I've got Civilization 4 still. That's what the heck's going on.
Shall we try and save this?
Go for it.
Yeah.
So, I have, and I've certainly used it, but you've probably been better at
it. No, it's too late. It's too late to save it. Screwed it up.
That's the magic word.
Nope.
What was it? The windmills again?
Yeah.
No,
water mills.
It's a mill.
Yeah.
Come on. Windmills, water mills. Anyway.
And warriors upgrade to Iron Man? Or Iron... Whatever.
The long sword. Iron Man!
So, Dan doesn't know how to balance medieval units. Sorry, had to throw that in there.
Medieval units. Will you just spam longswords? It's not like you can use knights.
That comment is non sequitur to this episode.
It is.
I'm actually surprised you took this long to make reference to it at all. So
I was being good.
And then you threw it all away.
Hey, you know, if I knew that you swearing was going to get Mackie onto the call, I would have told you to do that earlier.
Carter bows are awesome.
No, they're not.
Oh.
Depends who you are playing as.
People don't listen to this show for our opinions. What are you talking about? This is crazy.
So, this was episode 115. I remembered. There was a show name? I'm sorry. Polycast. Like, of course it was a Polycast. Everybody knew it was a Polycast.
date April 2nd, 2011. Civilization 4 and Civilization 5 sound clips, copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.